I was wondering what your thoughts were around all of this build-up to the eclipse the other day. I don't know if you were paying attention. I know we didn't even talk about it, really.
I feel like this happens every time we have an eclipse, though.
What happened? What were you seeing?
Well, I wasn't paying close attention because I feel like these things always get kind of pumped up and, I don't know, you know, used to prey on people's emotions. You know, I saw everything from like apocalyptic stuff to, you know, like some kind of reinvention of the world, like some kind of, you know, like, I don't know, exposition burst into something.
Or transposition kind of thing.
Yeah. Transposition burst, into something new. I mean, mostly I discount a lot of the extreme stuff because I just feel like I'm not convinced in my observation and experience that things necessarily work like that, you know? Maybe they have once before. But I'm curious on your comments. But I always feel like the eclipses are pumped and pumped and pumped as supercharged, you know, periods of... I think it's wonderful for people to use powerful energy for personal goals and ways that they want to reinvent themselves and use that energy to fuel and manifest, like, desires and things like that to propel them forward. But mostly I feel like it's all hype.
Right. Yeah, I was just wondering what your thoughts were. I'm online with social media a lot more than you are.
Yeah.
So I was just seeing so much. I mean, there was so much from the alternative media. It reminded me of that line from the Zeitgeist album by Smashing Pumpkins. Apocalyptic memes! You know, it's like, you know, they're just all over the place. They just come at you. And this was an album, by the way, that was released in, like, 2011, pre-2012, and they were talking about the same stuff, you know. And it just happens, like you said, it just happens in cycles. It just there's a build-up to them, and then nothing happens, and then it's rinse and repeat, with, you know, tremendous... variety of interpretations, everything from the rapture to doomsday to economic downturn, even like Waters Above talking about what was going to happen with the crypto market. This is a very important date and all of this stuff. And really nothing happened.
It was like the, you know, same old usual. But I think it's funny. It's almost like people are I think they get addicted to the drama of these types of events and get kind of sucked in, you know, and are curious.
Right.
But what do you think? Were people fearful? Because I didn't follow.
Oh, yeah. A lot of people were, you know, making videos and writing about, you know, sort of the end of the world. It was going to be the end of the world. I think.
How many times have we had, you know, like...
Oh, that's what I mean. It's happened. It's constantly happening on either a small scale or a medium to much larger scale. There's just constant fear porn going through the cultocracy, our world cult. It's constantly just churning away, and it just goes from one thing to the next. There seems to be no rhyme or reason to it. I mean, there is some history of weird things happening on eclipses. I get that. There's also been some good things that have happened on eclipses, and there have been some like market upturns that have happened around various types of eclipses. Just one example.
Right, yeah.
But what I think, you know, the term that came to mind, well, I wanted to say I saw this really cool meme by Brendan Murphy, or it wasn't by him, but he put it out on his Instagram, and it was like, you know, glimpses, you know, glimpses over, we, you know, nothing happened, you know,
we now return to your regularly scheduled life.
Yeah, exactly. Your regularly programmed, literally, life. So the word that kept coming to mind for me was catastrophobia.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
You know, that was that Barbara Hand Clow book from, you know, decades ago, I think. Mm-hmm. She, you know, she had certainly a lot of her own wild opinions about what had created that trauma in the human psyche that caused people to always be fearful of the next big extinction level event or whatever might be happening,
right.
You know, whatever
something
might be coming our way,
yeah.
Something major. And she believed that it had to do with something like maybe a meteor or something with the Vela constellation or something. I can't remember it specifically what she thought it was. It's been quite a while since I read that book. I did mention it in Conscious Healing. But anyway, so I love the term, though, because we don't have to accept her explanation for what causes catastrophobia to exist. I think catastrophobia is constantly being massaged and managed by the great parasite, the archons, the matrix, the simulation, whatever you want to, however you want to describe it. It's constantly being used and kind of updated and upgraded to the current mindset.
Right, modernized.
Like right now, there's a tremendous amount of catastrophobia around AI.
Oh, yes, that's a really good point. Yeah. Thinking that, you know, AI technology is going to transmute the species and take over the planet and, you know, we'll change our world into a drastically different place that's no longer human.
And certainly very dystopian.
Yeah,
you know, whether
yeah,
you look at it
dystopian.
From a transhumanist perspective or it's the machines that are going to take away human jobs en masse or that it's, you know, going to basically turn creativity or art into something mechanistic or inhuman, non-human, maybe inhumane. And, you know, that's certainly a possibility, or that's one way all of this could go. But it seems to me that things of a technological nature, whether it's the printing press or the train or the automobile or the radio or the computer, what really happens in those scenarios over and over again is that people get very reactionary and rear guard against new technologies, and I'm one of them. I still don't really like cell phones, but the main reason I don't like cell phones is because of the privacy issue and the tracking issue. It's not because the cell phone in and of itself is not a useful tool, and you know,
right.
Or it's not a useful tool if you sit there and, you know, and text and watch TikTok all day, but it can be a useful tool in the right hands with the right mindset. So what I was wanting to get at is this notion that technology is usually fought against. There's a very negative response. There's a doom and gloom. There's a kind of catastrophobia around new technologies, especially groundbreaking, pioneering, game-changing technologies like we're seeing with what they're calling AI, and that's a whole other subject. But the upshot is usually that it offers whole new creative avenues for people in their private lives, in their businesses,
their professional lives,
and even in their creative lives. I mean, think about photography. I know this well. I studied the 19th century a lot in graduate school. And this was when we really saw the rise of photography, and people were freaked out about it, and they absolutely, you know, hated it in a lot of ways. They were fascinated by it as well, but there was a lot of doom and gloom around photography. And you know, lo and behold, we now almost universally people think of photography as an art form, but for a long time that was debated. Is photography even an art form?
Yeah, that's so interesting. Something that we take for granted now. People being skeptical about, I mean, to me, I always felt like the internet was a form of AI. You know, every technological advancement that involves programming, I mean, you see it in the medical world too. I mean, I have
MRIs,
to say,
you know,
I'm not a doctor person, and you know, I try to take care of myself the best I can. But some of the advancements that have been made for certain things, you know, utilizing certain technologies, I mean, are mind blowing. You know, so to say that there's not a place for room for technology to grow and expand in all areas for, or to be utilized as tools, you know, I think it's a valuable way to look at things, a perspective shift maybe from, you know, this fear and paranoia of, you know, our world being stolen from us, you know, as we know it. But it goes back to the agenda and the great parasite and the Lushing and everything that you were talking about and the with the eclipse energy and things like that, big events. These are perfect opportunities for Lushing people and generating fear and, you know, feeding this great parasite or whatever energy that wants to take energy from us. You know, whatever power that wants to kind of take our energy and disempower us.
Well, one of the hallmarks, as I've studied the intelligence at the top of this control pyramid of the matrix or the constructor, and one of the hallmarks of it is that it uses the same playbook over and over. It uses repetition. There's very little creativity. There are variations on themes. Sometimes there's a development, a little modification, some kind of programming upgrade, if you want to look at it that way, a patch, something like that. But mostly, it just happens over and over again. When it finds something that works, it runs the same program constantly. And so the Lush program, having to do with catastrophobia, is absolutely identifiable. And so you can be almost 100% assured when you see that program running the next time that it's really not based on any reality or anything that's even likely to occur, but it's the great parasite and the great parasite's minions putting the story out there, running the same playbook, because it works. It works over and over and over. Now, most of the minions, when I use that word, don't even know they're a minion, and they don't realize that they're being used, but they are a tool of the great parasite, and I could name names, but I won't.
Well, these scripts that are being run are also subconscious trauma triggers, so that's what's happening beneath people's awareness, and it's very easy to re-trigger those same things over and over in basically similar ways once you've already exposed people to that. You've done it once, you were successful en masse or whatever. I mean, look at the mass shootings as an example.
Yeah, absolutely.
That happen, rinse and repeat, and are just very curious.
Very curious, yeah, to me, that also has the whole, you know, the great parasite's handwriting signature all over it. Regardless of who's actually pulling the trigger, it's being orchestrated at some level through mind control. And I don't necessarily mean at the level of the perpetrators, but at the level of the events that are put in motion by certain minds who are in service to the great parasite. And then, you know, from there we end up with outcomes. And we have people who are constantly steering these outcomes. These people are almost like AI prompters or something. They're prompting the construct, and they keep prompting and prompting and prompting until they get a result that creates a looshing situation. So whether that's, you know, violence, or that's economic collapse, or just a lot of hullabaloo around, an eclipse or something like that, it can be really just about anything. But what's happening is those trauma grooves in the collective psyche and in the individual psyches and even in the brain neurologically are just getting deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. So this catastrophobia is being driven in to the human species. And honestly, you know, probably the biggest hammer driving in those stakes into the human psyche is the alternative media right now. I mean, the mainstream media, yes, but a lot of people have checked out. A lot of people who can think a little bit for themselves have checked out from that. The people still watching mainstream media, in my opinion, it's really hard to call them human. I'm sorry if that's somebody you know.
But you're right. The alternative media is very doom and gloomsy as well. And that's because this is the stuff that stirs people up. I mean, I'm sorry, but good news is not exciting. You know, we've seen that. And so it's to take a slant to, you know, propose an idea that, you know, makes people question something, you know. But I still think that's preying on people. Like, until people can, like, withdraw more, at least be able to have a separation and be like, okay, well, you know, that is what it is, but, you know, I'm gonna, you know, find my inner guidance about what I choose to think about these things being presented as things going on in the world.
That's back to being in but not of the world. We talked about that so many times, because, you know, the people who are so rear guard. So I've called myself a Luddite jokingly before, but who are so Luddite-like, who are just super rearguard anti-technology, for example, and wanting to pull away just almost on principle, but not so much on principle, I feel like. Most of these people are actually just afraid. They're paranoid. They're not mentally all there. These people are not really living in, you know, you're living in a dream world, Neo. That's what's happening with these people. They're creating some kind of version of the world that's, and then that begins to conform to their version of it because they're creating it. I want to talk about how that happens in just a minute. And they end up doing a kind of impossible thing where they try to pull away from the world entirely, as opposed to having clear boundaries, having reasonable practices for how you engage with the world and that sort of thing. They end up fearing it and trying to retreat from it. And usually, I don't know, that doesn't seem to work out too well in most cases. I know so many people who have gone off grid, who have gone on, you know, they've become digital nomads, they've, you know, gotten out of one country or another, and usually they come back. It just doesn't work out. I mean, sometimes it does, but in many, many cases, the grass is not greener. And it's, you know, you're left with a strong impression that the best course of action is to be present where you are and to make the most of it. I don't mean you can't move around, of course. I mean more like you're be present where you are in your life, in the world, in this life.
Right, yeah. It's not about running away. If anything, it's about turning inward. You know, and I don't know, maybe cultivating more of an inner silence, or being able to separate out all the fuzz.
The fuzz.
all the static.
Static, yeah.
But I get it. I understand why people are feel lost, and they get pulled in so many different directions and so preyed upon by, you know, different people. I mean, you know, we are fortunate that we don't have a lot of, like, antagonistic sort of pulling at us in our lives from friends or family or people not in our alignment that makes things, like, way more challenging, or, you know, at work or whatever people do. I think that makes it really, really difficult for people to unplug.
Oh, I agree. I mean, during the whole COVID era, you know, my heart went out to so many people who were just stuck in impossible situations with family or work or whatever.
Right.
And they're just, you know, they either had to make peace with situations that were very, very challenging and compromising, or they had to skedaddle. And, you know, we didn't have to do that. We did move during that because we didn't like where we were. So we came down south, way south. But yeah, we had the ability to do that. Not everybody had the ability, the resources to do that. So
yeah,
I understand it, that people are having to navigate different situations during this really wild time, you know. Whatever this is, I mean, I jokingly call it the end of the world sometimes, but I don't really mean it in the way that, like, you know, eschatology junkies mean it. I mean that we're actually in a kind of postmodern moment.
We're
learning that we really are creating all of this. And if you don't figure out that you're creating it, then it's created for you.
Right, and you're participating by default in whatever, you know, you allow your energy to feed. Whether you consciously know it or not. And I mean, there's nothing about perfection here or doing things right. Everyone's just learning as they go on.
Right, muddling through. We'll rub along.
We'll rub along.
We'll rub along, isn't it?
We've been watching a lot of British television.
It's really it gets under the skin.
Good and funny stuff out there. Seriously.
It's true. So I wanted to close this little chat with just a handful of quotes. I'm not going to do this every time we sit down to talk necessarily, but I do like having some structure. And these are four quotes by Terence McKenna. And if you don't know who Terence McKenna is, look him up. An amazing, amazing thinker, no longer with us. The first one has to do with this idea of I won't tell you what I think they are. I will read the quotes and then we'll talk about them. How's that?
Okay.
All right. So I want to put these in a box. This is the quote. Half the time you think you're thinking and you're actually listening.
I like that. Oh, because, well, I was going to say that people talk out loud and work through things that they're thinking in their minds. So in one way, when you're bouncing things off of someone else, you're like listening to the feedback that you get either from the person, but more so from yourself, I think. Because you put it out there to kind of field a feeling response. What did you say?
Yeah, sure.
What are your thoughts?
Sure. I mean, I went in a different direction with my because of just my thought process and the work that I've been doing for a long time. I don't disagree with what you're saying, but another way of kind of decoding what he's saying has to do with my thesis in The World, Cult, and You, that, you know, essentially the human mind has been taken over by an intelligence that I call the great parasite, and that it's basically thinking our thoughts for us. Now, this is a shamanic concept.
Right,
this goes back
right.
into Castaneda's work and some other shamanic lineages. Mm. So when we're, if you think you're thinking, you're actually listening. Basically, you're being radio controlled. You're being, you're receiving downloads and information and directions, even, and you don't actually realize it.
Yeah, like in your Cali book.
Yeah, Cali the Destroyer is all about that. I thematize and dramatize this exact dynamic. So if you haven't checked out Cali the Destroyer, please do.
No, that makes sense. It's like, you know, the subtle mind control.
I think that's what Terrence McKenna was talking about. But he might have also been thinking about it from a more, I would say, positive perspective. He was definitely into psychedelics.
Well, I was going to say, like, if and you so, go into that realm
yes,
of psychedelics,
then it could be plants teaching
yes,
you. It could be
absolutely.
Animals reaching out
your
to teach you.
Your experiences through these substances.
Absolutely. So
yeah.
It's both.
When you think they're your thoughts, but they're not really your thoughts. They're
And this just
know,
gets into the subject of
greater.
The fact that the human mind, the psyche, is porous and is in an interactive relationship with the environment,
yeah,
with the greater environment.
And very reflective, which is kind of what I was saying, that you very often
good word.
Get back what you put out there. And a lot of times people are looking for reassurance, validation, you know, for their own thoughts that they're having too. So whatever the means, you know, for trying to have that come back.
So the next quote is also by McKenna. You simply have to turn your back on a culture that has gone sterile and dead and get with the program of a living world in the imagination.
That's loaded. You can go your own way. You must go your own way.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I think, you know, look at our little COVID example, not that we were talking about a few months ago. And despite the enormous challenges that period presented, it was a huge stimulus for a lot of people for, you know, knowing who your real friends were and, you know, just kind of like realizing where you stand on certain things that you hadn't spent much time thinking about. And there was like this inner fortitude, you know, that some people that was strengthened without really knowing that was happening.
Mm-hmm. Truly, the catalyst.
Yeah, it was a huge catalyst. So, I don't know. Yeah, people, I think more people walking their own path and making decisions from the heart.
And turning their back on the culture. The
yeah.
greater culture. I mean, I look at popular culture, and for the most part, I just want to hurl.
Yeah.
It's disgusting to me.
Yeah. So, not putting your energy in there, choosing not to support or engage, you know, any number of things that feed that culture. I think that's hugely important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, this is the next quote, and it's a biggie. So following up on the theme of the imagination, so I feel that Terrence in this next quote kind of tells you how that works and how to activate this imaginative potential. So this is the quote. The syntactical nature of reality, the real secret of magic, is that the world is made of words. And if you know the words that the world is made of, you can make of it whatever you wish.
Wow. Yeah, I like that. Extremely powerful. I mean, we all know how powerful words are in general.
Spell casting. Spelling. Spelling bees.
Well, just huge. I mean, I know,
spell,
you know, action is important too, but for intention, I mean, I really think speaking it is powerful. getting clear, you know.
But don't you think this is beyond affirmations?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So what? Because what he's talking about is the building blocks of what we call reality. Being in it's actually in the beginning was the word,
right.
Literally.
Yes.
Which is something I've been saying for decades.
Right. Yeah. Well, I love the Native American stories and storytelling, and I think I've mentioned this before, but just the creation stories. I mean,
The Athabascan raven goes and gets the sun, and
yeah. I mean, I do think without the sound and the word, there would be no creation. It's like it gives it form, it gives it structure and instructions, you know, for manifesting.
It's also, this quote also touches on our work, or, you know, it relates to our work, I should say, in which we have examined the relationship between the genetic or inner genetic structure of people and language, specifically vowels.
Yes.
And we've long had this idea that the world was created by vowels initially, and that at some point in time, consonants were inserted, and that the consonants broke up the unified flow of vowels, and this created duality, in a nutshell. This is what I write about in my regenetics books. So the idea, this deeply postmodern idea, which is also a very ancient alchemical idea, that the world was brought into being by language, is it's something that we are coming to terms with again. A lot of people are onto this. I posted this on Facebook not too long ago, or maybe today, I can't remember. Today or yesterday, and a lot of people did respond to it favorably. And I would say that this is the magic here that we're being asked to play with. I get into this a little bit in my little ebook, Playing in the Magic. We could use language, but not just from an affirmation standpoint. That's, to me, just the beginning of a process of learning how to use language. Literally, we have the ability to create different reality structures using language. This is why I believe that history moves along. It's not because it's some organic flow of time, or that some natural rhythm of the construct, is that human consciousness, in interacting with the construct and with other consciousnesses, moves history along by changing it. This is historical,
right.
Development.
Yeah.
And language is the motor that drives that process.
The narrative. That
it's
we're
the
living.
Narrative. We no longer live in a world of news. We live in a world of narrative. We've been talking about this for several years now, very openly, in the, you know, the community of people who are questioning the official narrative.
Right, and there's still plenty of room for that road to fold out, unfold in front of us.
Yep.
So how do you think people are using narrative or words consciously in creating? Like people who aren't writers per se. You know.
Well, you don't have to be a writer for sure. A lot of people are speaking from a place of gnosis. They're using language very consciously, but also they're using language creatively and passionately. If you just look at what happens in a lot of music, and has been happening for a long time, that this is a kind of hotbed of the creation of new words. There even someone pointed this out on my little Terence McKenna quote that I left on Facebook today, that, you know, he also said something to the effect of, if you're feeling something or you're knowing it on the inside but you don't know how to express it, create a new word and then you will create a new reality.
I like that.
Right? So there's lots of different ways to interact with this notion of language and creation. I think it's also possible to extend the definition of language to include various kinds of expression that are not linguistically based. So you might get into painting or other types of dance or different ways of expressing in a different kind of quote-unquote language that still convey meaning through movement. You know, not necessarily movement of the vocal cords, but some kind of movement.
Some kind of channeling that energy into something constructive, something more tangible, which even dance, in my mind, is tangible.
Oh, yes.
It's a manifestation.
Absolutely. If you've ever seen Martha Graham's show, which I've done on occasion in my life, that's a language.
Yeah, that is a language. That's really, really cool. Dance is a language.
I have a video about that. How to get back in your groove or something like that. So
that's beautiful.
I have one more quote, and I'm going to just finish with it, if that's okay. Kind of like we did the last time. And I'm just going to read it. It's another Terrence McKenna quote. And it's just some food for thought to take with you into your day and to your next ventures and adventures, and I wish you luck on all of that. Here's the quote. Nature loves courage. You make the commitment, and nature will respond to that commitment by removing impossible obstacles. Dream the impossible dream, and the world will not grind you under. It will lift you up. This is the trick. This is what all these teachers and philosophers who really counted, who really touched the alchemical goal, this is what they understood. This is the shamanic dance in the waterfall. This is how magic is done, by hurling yourself into the abyss and discovering it's a feather bed.